Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Wednesday edition. Frank Sennett comes by most Wednesdays. Frank from Cranes. And one of the things I want to talk to Frank about, he's following what's going on in Springfield. The state Senate voted on a couple proposals. You know, they're working on this compromise package, the Republican and Democratic leaders in the Senate. If they can get it through, they're hoping that then that will kind of shame or pressure the House into approving something similar, and maybe the budget deadlock will be over. Well, today they're voting on some of the tougher things. So Frank's watching that, and we'll check in with him a little bit later to see how that's going. Also, it's a big week for the folks at M-Hub. It's a new incubator, I guess, but for manufacturing, with the eye on manufacturing. Haven Allen is the executive director, and we will talk to him a little bit later in the program. But we start with Terry Savage. Holy camoly, Terry. Have you seen what's going on Wall Street today?
Over 21,000, over 300 points. This is it's a pretty historic day.
It's up 313 points right now. And, you know, I was thinking about, has there ever been, I know that, you know, as that gets higher, it's really less of a leap from 1,000 to the next, from 20,000 to 21. I get that because of the percentages. But how does this compare historically when you look at runs in the market from election day to where we are today?
Well, this has been a pretty dramatic increase just since the election. And I think probably what sealed today's exuberance was the president's speech last night, because without being political, for the first time, it appeared that some sense of at least rational thought
that's crazy
back into Washington, and the message was a good one. You know, there'll be a lot of infighting, no doubt, over taxes and health care and border taxes and so forth, where you're going to get the money to do the infrastructure. But right now, the stock market likes the direction, and that's the key. The market lives on expectations and hopes. And right now, hopes are riding high.
Okay, so wait a minute. I'm loving this. I'm telling you, I'm all for it. Let's keep it going. I'm checking my 401k every day. And I get some of the policies the president's already acted on, and those he says he's going to act on, are good for business. Deregulation, tax overhaul, things like that. So I get the run up there. I don't get the fact that people are actually saying that because he seemed more presidential last night, that that's why we're up 300 points today. That to me,
absolutely.
That seems so. I mean, how many times have we, with this president, said, well, now he's going to pivot. Now he's going to pivot. Well, I can't believe they're putting that much faith in that one speech.
Well, I'm not a psychologist, but that was, I think, an impressive performance last night. And that's what the market was looking for. It's not about just what's good for business. We had GDP numbers that show that consumer spending is critical. Yesterday, we had the consumer confidence index rising to its highest levels in 15 years. So what's happened is there's a general, in spite of some of the horrendous political things that have come out in the last 30 days, from the point of view of economic growth, there's just a lot of hope that the right policies will be put into place that will continue to provide jobs for consumers and continue to grow the economy. So I hesitate when you say, well, this is good for business. If we can get the economy growing again, it's going to be good for everyone.
Yeah, but I mean, it starts with business. But the policies are to help business, and the ideas, and that will help everyone through business, right? I mean, that's not unfair.
We've created a lot of government jobs over the last decade and a half, and that hasn't created a lot of economic growth. We know that we had growth, but it was sort of substandard. That's a word that was used for the last 8-10 years. And if we can jumpstart growth in business, we can. It's not just the profits. It's what's in your 401k. It's everybody who's thinking, oh, will I be able to retire? Feels a little bit happier. Now, don't go out on a limb. The Wall Street Journal lead article today was how luxury car sales are being spurred because this is the because everybody's so happy and the market reflects it, and so do car sales. This is when I step in as Terry the Money Lady and say, wait a minute, this is when you start setting more money aside. Don't get out on a limb with debt. In fact, next week's column is just about that.
I want to talk about this week's column in a little bit, in student loans, but Did you see the McDonald's news today? I'm just wondering what you make of that.
I did. Well, let's have some full disclosure.
You used to be on the board, right?
I was on the board for 12 years.
Now, could you eat all the McDonald's you wanted when you were on the board? Is that how that worked?
Oh, and we were absolutely. We tried everything that came out of the test kitchen once or twice. And I also, so I still remain, I mean, for me, McDonald's is a significant part of my portfolio, and because I took all my director's fees in stock. So I'm, as an investor, I'm pleased. But more important is the recognition in the last year and a half that McDonald's could not just be the same old company. I don't know the current management, but it's impressive that the use of technology, the use of new products. You know, I love Big Macs, but I can't remember ever ordering one. We would taste them at times. But now that they have the Mac Jr., that's my new favorite sandwich. So I don't do that every day, but they've made the right move to expand the visits. And that's the real thing that's the challenge for McDonald's. I don't speak from any inside information, but, you know, the stock is up near its all-time highs now.
Yeah, and so, I mean, look, completely, totally pulling for them. I had some meetings out with the people at McDonald's a few years ago, and, you know, they, I know that the culture there today is so different than, it's my expectation anyway, so different than it was there 3 years ago or 4 years ago. They've kind of had to go through a transformation.
Everybody has to change to stay alive. By the way, I have news that's just, I don't know if I sent you the press release. It came out at 1:01, just in the middle of the news. But here's some interesting news that might happen for today's Social Security recipients.
Can we take a break and do it after the break, Terry?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because I know this is, we've talked about this before, right?
I thought we invented this
idea. I think you invented it. I didn't have anything to do with it. Okay, everyone, listen to this. Terry Savage is going to save the world when it comes to senior citizens, and that's coming up in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is on a phone line now. You can read more of her columns, connect with Terry at terrysavage.com. Okay, a few weeks ago, Terry was talking about the cost of living increases for Social Security recipients, and she said it's really not fair because they're always so low, they don't reflect the dollars, the things that seniors actually spend their money on. She said that the COLA should instead be based on things that seniors buy, not just the cost of living in general. Lo and behold, Terry Savage speaks and the whole world is reacting.
You know, I think a coincidence of great ideas. I'll tell you, I was so surprised. Congressman Garamendi from California and 23 other co-sponsors have introduced a bill in Congress to change from the current CPI for urban wage earners, which determines both federal retirees and Social Security cost of living, to something called CPIE. That's been calculated over years that I didn't really know. And between 1982 and 2014, they say in their press release, it has shown that price increases for individuals of 2% or more, of 0.2% or more on average annually. And that's because seniors rely on medical care and medical cost prices have outpaced traditional inflation, which we have said. So now there's actually a bill in Congress to use the CPIE, and that would amount over a lifetime of Social Security recipients to getting a lot more money, and military retirees.
So the idea is that they say, you know, we're gonna keep up with what it would keep, what you need to keep up with your standard of life. We're gonna keep up that way, and the figure they've been using really hasn't done that. So this is a way to be a little more in tuned with what they're actually spending.
The CPI index they're using was introduced in 1972. We've got much more sophisticated ways of slicing and dicing costs. And so let's all, when this, I'm going to probably write a column about it when it actually gets introduced and let you know where to comment, because the CPI elderly index, I hate to say that, over 62 doesn't strike me as elderly, but that's the way it's titled, and it would really be a big benefit and much more reflective of real life for seniors who depend on Social Security, so many of them, for the vast majority of their income.
It will cost us more, though, won't it?
Well, yeah, here we go. Just, I don't, in the first section, I didn't want to throw a bucket of cold water on the on the discussion, but in less than a month, the national debt issue and the debt ceiling issue is going to come into play. So if you want to know how long this bull run has to last, it's probably through the current euphoria that we'll do all the right things for business until we run smack dab into, oh, my God, are we going to raise the debt ceiling over $21 trillion? And that's supposed to come up for discussion in March. They can always stretch it out, but that will hit the news in about a month.
All right, so there's that. We'll follow that, and I look forward to your column on the CPIE. Tell me about the column this week when it comes to renegotiating student debt. Is that, I guess it's becoming more and more common, right? You lose some safeguards, though, don't you?
Yes, that's a critical thing. Refinancing student loans, consumers are smart about everything else they do, so why not about refinancing student loans? In fact, there are so many companies out there now that refinancing student loans has become a new business. And many student borrowers find they can save a small fortune in interest rates or payments over the life of the loan. So I have a new column up giving you some tips. I know we're running close to the end of our time, but I think that it's worth considering if you have already, especially if you have non-federal student loans. Those private student loans have had no incentive to cut you any slack. They don't have things like deferral and income-based repayment plans. Many parents also have taken out PLUS loans. They have the highest interest rates. So if, in fact, you've got a high-rate student loan, read the column at terrysavage.com and see how you can check out several sites at once to refinance your student loans and get the best deal possible. You do have to have a good credit, but the average balance refinance is over $53,000. You do want to make sure you don't stretch out the term of the loan, because even at a lower rate, you'll have a larger interest burden. But it's still, student loans now, we have more outstanding in student loans than we do in credit cards.
That's just amazing. All right, so check that out, terrysavage.com. All right, great to talk to you again. We'll do it again next week.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. A lot going on in Chicago, a lot going on. We were talking earlier about Washington. It could be a big day in Springfield as well. Frank Sennett joins us from Crain's Chicago Business. He does most Wednesdays to go over some of the stories that Crain's is covering, and we'll get to those. But I want to start with a story really we're all covering, and that has to do with the Senate, the Illinois Senate may be moving toward a compromise budget. Good afternoon, my friend.
Good afternoon, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I'm looking at my Twitter feed there during Kim's headlines, and I see that there have been a number of bills passed out of committee in the Senate this morning. They were just by number, so I don't know which ones. But where are we when it comes to this budget deal, this compromise deal between Republicans and Democrats just on the Senate side?
Yeah, so on the Senate side, as our Greg Hines reported this morning, it is D-Day, really, for this budget compromise, the grand bargain that's coming out of the Senate. They took some easier votes yesterday, and this is the day when they're going to be looking at some of the more thorny issues, such as pension reform and tax increases, that kind of thing. So we've got a proposal to raise the individual income tax from 3.75%, which is the current rate, to 4.99%, and extending the state sales tax to cover health clubs and maybe other services as well.
Yeah, I'm all for we need to reform, we need to change, but I don't want to pay tax on my health club. I already pay too much for that. Can Hines get that out of the bill?
I'll give him a call and say it's the Bertrand Amendment.
Go ahead, I'll wait.
He's on the other line.
Right, so they do have to increase the income tax hike. I mean, that's a big part of it. The stuff they did yesterday, they approved the idea of a casino for Chicago. They approved the idea of making it easier to get rid of townships, which is fairly non-controversial. The trickier stuff comes today. And, I mean, have you seen any progress? Do you know where we are right now in Springfield?
I'm following Twitter just like you are, yeah. Steve, and I'm not seeing any huge announcements right now, but I'm guessing the votes are imminent. You know, yesterday they were supposed to deal with the pension reform issue, but they couldn't get the votes where they needed it, so they kicked the can till today. So they only got 28 votes before it was placed on postponed consideration because some Republicans wanted bigger changes. And Democrats did not want to offend their friends in the labor organization.
We talk about Twitter. We're talking about following Rich Miller, I would imagine. Capital Facts, he's got a relationship with you guys, and he's usually pretty quick on all of this.
Rich Miller is the guy, yeah, in Springfield, for sure.
And so it's there's a little drama, isn't there? I mean, a lot of times when these things come up, they're already worked out. They're going to be voted on one way or another. Chris Redonio and John Cullerton have tried in the past with this and had to pull things back. As you said, they even had to pull something back yesterday. So we really don't know if they're going to end up getting this through.
And here's the big rub. You know, we've got Governor Rauner kind of tacitly throwing some, you know, support maybe behind the Senate grand compromise. So the thought is, if the Senate can move all this stuff today, that it puts a lot of pressure on Michael Madigan, the head of the Illinois House, to pass that and get it onto Rauner's desk. Now, there's a lot of assumptions baked into that. You know, is Rauner going to actually sign this stuff if it gets to his desk, and will Madigan play ball?
Well, and that's the thing. I don't know that. I remember Michael Madigan sort of caving to political pressure from the Senate anytime recently.
Yeah, I'm trying to search my memory banks for when that happened as well. So, you know, it seems like we'll have a deal when he likes the deal and feels it's a good deal.
So for those of us on the optimist side and the sunny side of the street, the Senate gets something done today. The governor indicates that he likes it, and which he's kind of been saying. He hasn't really said that, but he said, well, good luck with that, and I hope they do. So
So he hasn't put the kibosh on it. He hasn't said he's going to veto it or anything. And Lisa Madigan, the Secretary of State, has, of course, put some pressure on the situation by moving to cut the state pay because of the budget crisis.
Right. You met Attorney
General. You
said Secretary of State, but you met Attorney General.
Attorney General. Sorry, Steve. Live radio.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I know, because Jesse White's sitting right across from me.
I've seen her tumbling skills, by the way.
If I just saw yours. If the House does it, if the governor's on board, if the Senate does it, the governor's on board, then the idea is that, you know, all of this might finally end, and there would be huge pressure then on the speaker to do it. It might be optimistic. I don't know. We'll have to see.
And also it includes, you know, the bargain includes money for CPS so that the schools could actually go through the end of the school year, which my 13-year-old is really, you know, hoping doesn't happen, but I'm really hoping does happen.
Yeah, you know, it's a good point. I meant to bring that up because that is a big part of it for us here. I want to talk car insurance, but I want to make sure we have time to talk instead about Hickory Farms. Hickory Farms, you know, is, well, you get the catalogs in the mail right for Christmas time. You see them at the kiosks at the mall. They sell the summer sausage in December and cheese trays and these sort of gift packs. They've been based in Southern Ohio, and now they're coming to Chicago?
That's right. They are moving their headquarters to Chicago on South Wacker, in fact. So, you know, it seems very much like a farm fresh place to be. They're going to be just south of Willis Tower. They are now owned by a Chicago-based investment group, Module. So it makes sense to kind of move them over here. And Hickory Farms also has a lot of distribution partners, food suppliers that are headquartered in the area. So and the logistics support is very strong, obviously, in this city. So it made a lot of sense for them.
And the stockyards. They're here for the stockyards.
Yeah. Somebody might not have told them that they're not making a lot of smoked meats down back of the yard these days.
But what I like about the story is because they are this sort of slotted, you know, grandma sends the summer sausage to your house every year for Christmas or whatever. And they're sort of recognizing, like, look, we got to step it up a little bit. We're going to get into an urban environment. We're closer to greater innovation, and we're going to maybe redesign or bring in some new products. I don't know. Do you have any idea what those new products might be?
No, but however, their product line changes, I hope they never stop saying, "Hit Chris off."
I'm going to save that, and we're going to play that every week for the rest of your life. Frank Sennett on the phone line.
It's going to be the drop, huh?
It is. Thank you for that. Okay, let's talk about auto insurance, because this is a fascinating story. State Farm, headquartered in Bloomington, when it comes not to homeowners insurance, but when it comes to auto insurance, they lost their shirt last year.
Yeah, they had a big loss. They had $35.8 billion in claims and loss adjustment expenses for their auto group. And so they lost $7 billion for the year in that segment. They did eke out a profit overall, but they really were hurting on the auto side.
Now, Allstate was facing something similar, and they've raised their rates over the past couple of years and has helped them sort of turn that around, right? Did Allstate lose customers because of that?
They did lose some customers, but they did manage to basically hold serve this past year on their auto group. They just about broke even. And then State Farm also did hike their rates. They had the biggest auto insurance rate hike in 14 years for that company in the state of Illinois. And, you know, they've probably lost some customers, too. But that wasn't enough to offset the losses. And people are saying, you know, there's higher repair costs, higher medical claims related to these accidents. And also, get off your damn phone and start listening to Steve Bertrand on the radio like you should be while you're driving.
How much of that is it? Is it really so many more distracted crashes that's leading to more payouts for these insurance companies?
I mean, I think that's anecdotally what people are saying, but I'd like to see some studies. I mean, just based on what I see when I commute into and out of the city every day, that wouldn't shock me. Would it shock you?
No, it wouldn't. I'm going to start talking on my phone in the car because I'm paying for everyone else to do it. Right? My rates are rates are going up because of this. So why should I miss that email?
That's right. I think some texting, some audiobooks, you know, the whole schmear. And
yeah.
If you can turn it into a shaver, that'd be good too.
So that's the situation with State Farm. They did manage to make $400 million last year. It's down quite a bit, but it's not as if they're not making money, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of that was based on some investment returns, and they cashed out on some of that. And then they have a really good stock portfolio that's doing well for them. They own Disney, Johnson & Johnson, IBM stock that has performed very well.
Okay, get this. You're not going to believe this. Anything else good you want to say about Allstate? Because as we talk, there's a tour of Allstate leaders. They are over my left shoulder in the studio right now listening. Hello, everybody. How about that?
I would say great advertising campaign. I love their ads.
And it's a beautiful studio I'm sitting in, too.
Yes, the Allstate studio. I love coming down there. But, you know, President Palmer from 24 is, you know, one of the best guys in the world.
Oh, so that's right, right.
In good hands with him.
All right, big boy. We'll talk again next week, okay?
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 12:50 in the afternoon, Wednesday afternoon. Haven Allen is in the studio. He's the executive director of MHub, and he's already got his party clothes on for tomorrow. Haven, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Come right up to that microphone. All right, tell everyone why you've got your party clothes on.
Yeah, tomorrow we're having our grand opening. It's about 2.5 years in the making of opening a new physical product innovation center right on Chicago Avenue.
Okay, so, you know, I talk about these, and, you know, you could probably tell just talking off the air that sometimes it's a blind spot for me that I try to get my hands around this. So MHub is, it's an incubator of sorts, right? But it's, would you call it an incubator?
It's an incubator, innovation center.
It's a place where people go and build things, right?
Absolutely.
And so much is made of manufacturing in this country and in the city. And you're sort of, this is an incubator or a place that fosters people who want to manufacture things.
Yes, it is, both for, you know, entrepreneurs as well as local manufacturers. And we have big OEMs like GE who has residents.
No kidding. What would someone like GE do there?
GE is launching a new platform called Fuse, where they're open sourcing a solution for innovative ideas, like how to monitor pipelines and jet engines.
So tell me how it works. Say I'm a guy who's got an idea, wants to build. I've got an idea for a product. Do I come knocking on your door and then rent space from you, or how does the whole thing fall together?
Yeah, you rent space. There are several different types of memberships. You can get an office of about 100 square feet. You can rent a reserve desk, or you can just have access just to the machine equipment. Everything is month to month. You can come in, build your sort of prototype, and then you can also do your first run, which is a big gap in the industry. Most manufacturers don't want to touch small 100 to 1,000 sort of unit production.
So if I wanted to design something and bring it to market, I could actually build it there and run it out there.
Absolutely.
Has that happened yet?
Yeah, there's several companies out of there right now. I mean, there's a company called Outernet that makes one-way receiver satellite devices where you can get internet anywhere in the world. There's a company called Guard Llama that's out in production that does a panic remote fob button. I mean, there are lots of companies and activity going on already.
Okay, and so I'm just going to continue to reveal my ignorance here. What is it about a production line that can be, I mean, it must be a very versatile production line. Like,
yeah.
Right? Can you sort that out for me?
So we have 10 different labs. One on electronics have a full SMT line. So any sort of electronic device has a PCB board in it. There aren't many of those manufacturers available. We have a full line on site where you'll be able to produce PCB boards at the cheapest rate in the United States. There's also a plastics lab, metal cutting, metal fabrication, wood shop, 3D printing. Everything is configurable to do both the short runs and prototyping.
So it's the kind of a shop class for entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
And so if I'm that entrepreneur, what kind of skills do I have to bring in order to produce there? I mean, it sounds as if I have to come in with more than just an idea.
And a willingness. Yeah. I mean, we provide education as well, both on the business and technical side. So you can get trained up on equipment. But that's the beautiful thing about this. It's a community, right? You can just have an idea. And that group, Guard Llama, they had an idea. They engaged with an electrical engineer, a mechanical engineer to make that prototype, and then together launched a company.
So all those people were at ImHub.
Yes.
And so, you know, the president talks a lot about manufacturing. Governors, the mayor talk about loss of manufacturing jobs. I don't know that a lab like this is going to lead to a great increase of manufacturing jobs in Chicago, or is it? I mean, is that the goal?
I think that's the hope. I mean, ImHub came out of World Business Chicago. I used to work there as a strategist looking at the manufacturing sector. And one thing we were noticing, the number of manufacturing establishments was decreasing, the amount of investment in R&D and the amount of intellectual property were all decreasing, which doesn't give us a good outlook on future production. So we launched ImHub in partnership with a group called Catalyze Chicago, really to spur innovation, new product creation, new business and manufacturing. And that was one way we saw as a way to sort of change the demand curves and the production curves.
I think the mistake I make and a lot of us make when we think of manufacturing is we think of the stamping plant or U.S. Steel. We think of these giant companies and overlook the manufacturing. I talked to some people in Edgewater not too long ago about some of the manufacturing things there. I mean, the smaller companies that also mean these jobs.
Absolutely. There are over 14,000 manufacturing businesses in the Chicago region producing about $80 billion for our gross regional product and employing over 400,000 people. That is a huge impact to our local economy that we need to continue to help grow.
All right. So if people are interested, how do they find more information or do they knock on your door? How do they get involved?
Yeah. I mean, they can go to www.mhubchicago.com or come by for a tour anytime. We're located at 965 West Chicago Avenue. That's two blocks east of the Chicago Blue Line stop.
So there was a kid at, I think, Glenbrook North High School. We talked about him earlier this week. And he came up with, it's not the spectacle like Snapchat or Google Glasses, but it's sort of. I mean, it's on its way. And he had the idea for that. Is that the sort of thing where you can come to you guys and say, I've got this idea. Now, who can I talk to make it work and bring it to market?
We can definitely connect them with our community. There are engineers there that are willing to take on that extra work as they're developing their own company.
And so how much then is it just the idea, people, and then you? How do you foster this community? How do you create a community?
That takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, there's lots of different networking. There's lots of parties that have come to bear on this. I mean, there's the manufacturers, the corporates, the investors,
the
universities, and then the entrepreneurs. And we are very direct in our engagement. I mean, between now and the next 5 months, we have about 40 events planned. Anything from how to pitch to, you know, hardware cups, hackathons. Like, we're going to be doing one with Marmon where we're going to throw a challenge out to the world and say, for $10,000, come to ImHub and help us solve this sort of problem. For an actual industry.
You're answering every question with a smile. You must enjoy this.
Absolutely. As I said earlier, it is a surreal moment. A lot of work that has come together. Amazing team, amazing community, and we're excited for the grand opening tomorrow.
Well, good luck tomorrow with that.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Haven Allen, the executive director of ImHub.